Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Trevor Anderson here, taking charge this week. You know me, I'm a chart manager here at Billboard.
Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And, you know, this is the place where we talk about why what's on the charts is on the charts. So we're going to talk about one of Gary's favorite topics this week. You see, Gary's going to do a lot of talking at the end, so I'm going to spare him at the beginning. We're talking country music this week, so... if you don't know, the latest issue of Billboard has Luke Combs on the cover, the country power players, talking about who are the big movers and shakers in the country industry. So as part of that, we're going to extend the theme to the podcast this week and bring in a couple experts from Nielsen to discuss the current state of country. We're going to bring back repeat guest John Miller, who you've heard a couple times do some of these breakdowns of trends across genres at radio with us. And we're actually going to bring in a first-timer, Scott Musgrave, to talk about the current trends in country, some ratings, and a few other topics that are out there. Of course, the big specter of streaming is finally making its way into the country landscape. A lot of talk also in the really past couple of years about the lack of women getting played on country radio. So we'll dive into that a lot and try to figure out what's happening and what needs to happen there. And a lot more things coming your way. So stay tuned for that.
All right. Here's this week's top 10. On the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho. At night she's screaming, my, out of my mind. Oh, she's hot but a psycho, so left but she's right though. At night she's screaming, my, out of my mind. Grab a cop gun, kind of crazy, she's poison but tasty.
Number 9.
Packing the mail, it's gone. She like I smell cologne. Yeah. I just signed a deal, I'm on. Yeah, yeah. I go where I want, good, good. Play if you want, let's do it. I'm a young CEO, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Number 8.
Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody. Ooh, baby, baby, I'm dancing with a stranger.
Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody new. Ooh, baby, baby.
Number 7.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma more probably know me. Get more bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 6.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by ya. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in the dust.
Number 5.
I'm a sucker.
Number 4.
Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. But you're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah.
Number 3.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about where we're going before we get lost?
number two.
I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh. And number one.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is
there
attached.
We have it. A 9-week number one officially. Old Town Road. It's Billy Ray Cyrus helping out Lil Nas X. 9 weeks at number one. Also goes nicely with 9 digits in the streaming column. We're talking 115 million streams this week. Once again, per usual, towering over everything else in its path. And although, you know, at this point, it's been 9 weeks at number one. We've, you know, seen the narrative play out. All the pieces are in there. Finally, we get a little new aspect to talk about Old Town Road. And that is, as we are in the first week of June, it is officially time for the Songs of the Summer chart to make its annual return. First week, it mirrors the Hot 100's Top 20, so it's a season-long race that goes from Memorial Day up until Labor Day. Really, the way the song's been going, the way the streams have been going, and, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if anybody can catch up. It feels like Lil Nas has got a lot of room to go, but, you know, last year we saw Drake's In My Feelings come out about midway through the race, and thanks to the Shiggy Challenge especially, that song blew up with enough to get to number one by the end of the summer. So it's not a foregone conclusion, but it just seems like Lil Nas is leading by, what, 10, 12 links at this point?
Yeah. Horse.
You like that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Anything could come along. We don't know. It's 3 months, but you couldn't ask really for a better start. So it's maybe it's a race to lose at this point. So we heard Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus at number one. Up to number two is Billie Eilish with Bad Guy. That's a new peak for that song, a new best rank ever for Billie Eilish. So that's a Billy at number one and a Billy at number two. So I was wondering, has the same name sonically ever been numbers one and two in the same week? There's no easy way to research that. I just wound up either thinking.
I guess obviously the same person doesn't count.
Right.
If it's like Taylor Swift and Taylor Swift.
Right. Any thoughts before I tell you what I came up with?
Oh, goodness. I guess there's... and like, it's just first name, obviously, because Billy, okay, Billy. Do George Michael and Michael Jackson count?
First names only, but it's okay. Interesting that you mentioned those two, because I was going to mention two examples, and you mentioned both names, George and Michael.
Oh, wait a minute, come on, Trev! Okay.
You're close?
So George Harrison.
Yeah.
And George...
You just said the name.
Michael.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the first thing I thought of was it Faith and Got My Mind Set on You in early 1988? The closest they got, they were numbers two and three in the same week.
Oh, damn.
But then I was thinking, well, Michael Jackson was really big then too. And then I thought, oh, that must be it. So I don't know if this has happened. I haven't looked at every Hot 100 weekly, but at least one example I've came up with of the same name being one and two. Michael Jackson, 1991, December, Black or White was number one. Michael Bolton, When a Man Loves a Woman.
Michael Bolton.
Number two,
okay.
Michael Jackson and Michael Bolton.
When a man loves a woman.
One more thing I related to Billy Ray Cyrus this week. He has a brand new album, his own album this week, as much as he's so huge with the number one song in the country. His new album, The Snake Doctor Circus, is out, debuts on the country album sales chart.
But maybe we'll be free.
Kind of, we've talked recently a lot about Billy Ray Cyrus' catalog here on the podcast. Kind of has that Could Have Been Me sound to it, song The Reckoning. So great song on his new album. And Miley Cyrus, his daughter, has a new single out. Mother's daughter is being promoted to radio this week. So I'm talking Miley, I'm talking her father, Billy Ray.
Also got to give a shout out to Some action happening in the bottom part of the top 10 this week. Got a new song that you guys heard back there. Number 9, the song is Shug by DaBaby, rapper out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And if you're wondering if Shug might be an allusion to somebody who, I guess, you know, was popping back in the last time Billy Ray made his big debut in 92. This was also a guy who was very much in a different world, but very much on top of that world. That is indeed Marion Shug Knight, who most people, I'm sure, are most familiar with for his time at Death Row Records. Includes a lot of artists, including Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Tupac, all those very much in the Shug Knight orbit. So, interesting little shout out. You know, we got a little tie-in with Shug Knight coming back after all these years as well. Billy Ray Cyrus is not the only one getting a career revival in 2019, thanks to a rapper. So, yeah, shout out to Shug. And maybe I shouldn't advertise this, but DaBaby also been in the news recently for an altercation he had at a Louis Vuitton store that was on his Instagram. The video's got around. It's I don't condone violence, but somebody who's been messing with him for a long time, happened to see him in the store, you know, started to, you know, cause some drama, and DaBaby took care of it and actually put the drawing of the incident on a shirt and has been wearing that around. So not supposed to be a funny story, but I gotta admit, that is, you know, that's character.
Guess it's never really over. Just because it's over doesn't mean it's really over. And if I think it over, maybe you'll be coming over again. And I'll stick it over you all over again. Just because it's over.
Also, new music on the charts this week, not on the Hot 100 yet, but new Katy Perry, Never Really Over, debuts on a couple airplay charts. Pretty strong debuts, too. Number 21 on adult pop songs, number 26 on pop songs. It's been big on iTunes. Well, I can still say iTunes. It's been big on iTunes.
Soon it will be just music.
Yeah, but before it goes away. But could make a pretty decent Hot 100 debut next week for the numbers we have at the moment. It doesn't look like it'll be top 10 or anything, but top half of the chart, maybe top 40 in terms of sales, airplay, and streaming. Kind of back to her teenage dream, Prism sound, after getting a little bit away from it on the last album, and some of the this is just Katy. There's no guest stars on the song. Really, just her pure pop sound that worked for so long. We'll see how it does. Feels like a good summer song.
I think a lot of people are really like back into it. And one thing I think that's pretty telling is it's, at least on U.S. Spotify, you know, kind of benchmark, it's been trending around the top 10 pretty consistently. So the fact that it, you know, most songs obviously start high and then they kind of just work their way down. But she's really kept consistently and even gone up a little bit. So I think maybe people didn't know the song was coming out necessarily, or were maybe hesitant because of what they'd heard on Witness. But I think when people are giving it a chance, they're actually really, really enjoying it.
And in a year where so many pure pop hits, Jonas Brothers, so much else, is doing really well. Maybe she timed a call it comeback, timed it pretty well. At the same time, she's on Con Calma with Daddy Yankee and Snow. It's up to number 22 on the Hot 100, doing well at pop radio as well. So, yeah, Katy's got looks like a couple hits going forward here into the summer. As the title says, never really over.
Oh, no, Gary.
All right. Trevor, you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, what's going on country these days? We said Luke Combs is on the cover of the latest Billboard issue. It's our Country Power Players issue this week, where we're looking at the 100 industry leaders in the genre. And Nielsen just put on a webinar specifically about country, their latest one, looking at all different genres. So, yeah, let's talk country. We've had John Miller on the podcast before, VP Audience Insights at Nielsen Audio. He's back. Scott Musgrave on the podcast for the first time, head of U.S. radio for Nielsen Music. And just like we did a few weeks ago, getting into some of the depths of R&B hip hop, where the genre has been ratings wise at radio, how streaming is changing consumption of genres. Let's do all that for country and dig into all things country coming up here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast with Scott Musgrave and John Miller.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sunday morning, man, she woke up fighting mad. Bitching and moaning on and on about the time I had. And by Tuesday, you could say that girl was good as gone.
Scott in studio, John on the phone. Welcome to the Billboard Chappie Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And great awesome. To be back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Scott, it's your first time on the podcast. John, you've been here before. Scott, you're going to make us sound really bad with your radio voice.
I'm happy to be here.
So, talking country, times out really well to what Billboard's been covering. So let's just get into it. John, I'll start with you with radio mm-hmm. ratings. I guess we're not going to cover another format where we can say this is the number one format. Country, pretty much number one, just about every key demo. Country's number one among not even just music formats, all radio formats.
Yep, it's very close. As you said, it's almost, you know, sort of an unbroken string of the top format everywhere. There are exceptions. It's number two with teens. It's number two with folks 50 plus, but almost everywhere else, men, women, it's number one, which speaks to just the massive appeal that country has. And as you know, we do a lot of analysis here about formats and what the audience is doing. So we get to see that big landscape across the radio, you know, across radio in America. And country is very unique in that it seems to appeal evenly to people once you hit about the age of 18. You know, like if you take a look at the country audience and who they are and the audience makeup, you know, starting at the age of 18 until later in your life, you know, people are really passionate about country. You know, the amount of audience that is 25, 34 is the same as the amount of audience that's 45, 54, and so on and so forth. So other formats certainly do not look like that. And there are reasons for that. But from a, you know, music and lifestyle standpoint, country on the radio really appeals to a lot of people in the U.S.
Yeah, I was going to say musically, it's not there are some formats that are so youth driven. There are some that are just naturally more for older audiences. Kind of feels like just musically, sonically, country is kind of in that sweet spot that it never feels too young, never feels too old.
Yeah. And again, the term country can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, particularly depending on your age. And yes, there's the classic country format, which is out there, which is, you know, obviously older music. But country and new country, which is what we lump into our country numbers, there can be music that spans 40 years in there in terms of when it was produced. And that's been an interesting topic of conversation with sort of the country radio landscape for as long as I can remember, about, you know, how do you properly mix it together and how much new music do you play versus older music and what do the golds look like? So as you said, it's a very unique format in that other formats can't quite get away with that. You know, they can't quite get away with playing that much of a spread of music and still have such consistently strong ratings. But country really does it.
Yeah, lyrically too. It's one of the genres, maybe the most, that will pay tribute to artists that came before. You'll hear Willie Nelson. You'll hear George Jones being mentioned in lyrics. It's kind of what makes country country in some ways.
That's a good point. And country is so much about storytelling. You know, you feel that when you go to Nashville and you feel that when you go to some of the big country conferences. And you're right. That's just part of the story. It's part of the narrative of what country is. And that's people pay respects to it and they always reference it. It's like a great novel. You know, the storyline keeps going. The story arc continues through decade after decade.
Yeah. Ratings wise, John, do you know how long country has been number one? Is it, I'm not sure how far back Nielsen stats go, but do you know historically, whether it's decades, it's always been as strong as it is?
Yeah, and part of it is Nielsen only really started doing this, you know, ranking the formats in the last maybe 15 or 20 years, where we sort of started rolling things up and taking a look at nationally what is number one. So I don't have a hard answer, but it's about as long as I've looked at it. You know, certainly through the 2000s, country has been number one. News talk has obviously been right there. You know, it's right up there along with country. AC has been historically a very large format, but country's been number one for a long time. Yeah, for a long time.
One of the numbers I thought was interesting that you guys brought up, and you recently did this webinar. As you do for different genres. That's why we've had you on before on the podcast talking hip-hop last time, country this time. There are 5 million listeners fewer than there were 5 years ago for country. It went from about 68 million at a high point to about 63 mm-hmm. million now over the last 5 years. And in this webinar, you said it's probably because there are a couple hundred or about 100 fewer stations, which would make sense. Also, and maybe this is more just what you think, streaming cutting into it at all, would that be a part of it?
Well, the interesting thing about country is, you know, Scott can really talk about this. Country is one of the genres that's really picking up when it comes to streaming. And if you go back, again, the last 5-10 years and you look at country radio, we've seen over time that that audience has been slower to adopt streaming. And so it does make sense on that end that as technology changes and streaming audio changes and all those things change the landscape, that an audience that historically wasn't as prone to stream and wasn't as prone to go outside of radio to get their country music, now they've got so many more places to get it, and the data seems to show that catching up. Now, as you said, country peaked about 4 or 5 years ago. It was 2014. It had its biggest year ever. We saw the biggest shares historically we've ever seen in the markets. And it's, you know, remains number one since then, but the audience is about 5 million people smaller than it was at that time. It's hard to pinpoint exactly where all that has gone, but we know the landscape has changed. And there's a lot of radio formats that can look at those similar types of scenarios, right? The audience size of 4 or 5 years ago is larger than the audience size of today because everything has changed and the landscape has changed.
And that stat I gave, just to even explain my own stat, 68 million, is that 68 million weekly?
Yeah, weekly. When we talk about numbers, we do weekly numbers. Weekly cume is the technical term. So yeah, back in 2014, there was 68 million people listening to country music every week. As of 2018, was down to 63. So still a big number, right? Still the number one share format, but a smaller audience. And that's part of what Scott and I do is try to correlate. Where are they going? You know, if we can see this happening on radio, what is happening on streaming? It's not the same people exactly. We don't have panels that measure everything yet, but we try to correlate the data and what does it show and what are the leading indicators show.
And I thought the other interesting stat just to start off with, John, is where people are listening to country. Some of the top performing stations, no surprise, I guess, that they're mostly, if you just sort of generalize, sort of a cluster in the middle of the country, sort of north to south, but not on the coasts, more in the middle of the country is where country does best.
Yeah, and that matches what the Nielsen music team can tell you about, you know, country music fans, which is slightly different from country radio listeners, right? They survey different things, but you are correct. You know, the top performing stations are sort of, yeah, they're Eastern. There's certainly an Eastern influence to that. You know, a lot of Ohio, Tennessee, North Carolina, a bit of the Northeast Corridor. And then, you know, some other stations around the country, but that's what it looks like. And the reason I brought that up is that that matches very much what the music survey says about, you know, where are country music fans? They're in the East, they're in the South. So those two numbers should go together, even though we're measuring different people of different things. All those indicators should point to the same place.
All right, we're talking radio. Let's talk streaming, Scott, more your area of absolute focus. I guess the main point we could start with is radio really reigns over streaming when it comes to country. Radio really is still king.
Right. And so, you know, when you look at some of the numbers that we pulled for the webinar, I mean, one of the big things when you look at where are people consuming country music? And as you said, Gary, you know, radio still number one, 24% overall. as far as the time they're the amount of focus they're doing as far as where they're consuming the country music. On demand streaming number two at 19% overall, but radio is still king. Streaming's coming up. The streaming numbers overall are significantly up for country. As John said earlier, a few years ago, country was lagging behind. Country was not really streaming very much, listening to radio, listening to CDs, listening to even vinyl albums in some cases, but mostly they're listening on CDs. And now, it's really changing. Radio is still strong, but streaming is up. And they look at country streaming growth alone for audio streaming year over year from 17 to 18 is up 62%. 62% overall, 43.7 billion streams in 2018 for country music listeners alone. So these numbers are growing every year. And I think that they're going to keep going in that direction. But country's catching up is really what it kind of comes down to overall when you're looking at kind of those directional things. So radio is still going to be important, still going to be really strong. But there's going to be there's an additional player there with streaming, and that's something that's another place for them to consume the music, and it really has a lot to do with how consumption overall is changing, for music, and country really isn't much different than that, because when you look at overall traditional sales, traditional album sales certainly obviously are way off, both digital and physical. And then even kind of the old iTunes model where you would, which is now officially going away, as we heard, I think, yesterday. That whole model is going away, and those numbers are down just, huge amounts. At the same time, the streaming numbers are up for audio and for video. Streaming both are up significantly as far as the way people are choosing to consume music. Doesn't mean that to me, it doesn't mean as much that radio is going to be killed by it. It really means to me that it's a change of people, the way they're consuming music like they used to listen to on CDs or an album is going in the streaming direction. I think that's going to be a more significant change than for radio.
Yeah, that was interesting. You brought up some of these shares. So in terms of overall country listening, 24% share of overall listening is on radio. And you said 19%. On-demand streams, that radio share is a lot higher than other genres, and that
it
on-demand
is.
Streaming share is a lot lower than other genres.
It's 18% higher on an index basis, a 118 index for radio as far as the choice overall for country listeners. And when you look at on-demand streaming, it's 21% below average. So yes, that's absolutely the case, and that's still a big difference overall. What you see, satellite radio is interesting too. Satellite radio for country is only 8% overall, versus 24% for radio. But that index for country is 33% above average. So satellite's actually higher, and it's interesting. One theory I might have is that some country listeners want the new country and some of those outlaw country and some of the things like Willie Nelson's channel and so on like that aren't available on traditional terrestrial radio. I think they may be going there for some of those kind of very different flavors of country music that you don't necessarily get as much in most markets for country.
Yeah, and get a little southbound, southbound. Get a little southbound, southbound. Oh, got a ticket in an old wig zone.
Do you guys have any thoughts, just from what you've seen, just in observing music and specifically country, of why women are so underrepresented, both at country radio specifically, but is it more, and I don't know where the cause and effect really is. Is it with the labels not signing artists? Is it that they are, but they're not getting that response? I got into country music in the early 90s when women were ruling. It was Mary Chapin Carpenter and Trisha Yearwood and so many different acts. So it's feels sort of cyclical, but to hit just a low point now, just from everything you guys see, both Scott and John, do you have any thoughts on where do you think maybe the root cause is?
I can tell you from an audience standpoint, you know, country has mass appeal. So it appeals about as equally to men as it does to women. So the, in terms of who listens to country music, it looks like our country. You know, that's the radio point overall. Radio reaches the most people because everyone listens, it's mass, therefore it looks like America. So being the number one format will sort of back that up, right? Fill a stadium full of people and the majority of them are going to hear country music and that's going to look like our population today. So the audience is who the audience is. As to why stations make the call to play or not play an artist, that's certainly their discretion and it's the label discretion. And we do know, I think Scott and I can both agree on this, that country is very unique. As we said, you go to some place like a CRS, Country Radio Seminar, and there is no other radio music conference like that that I know of in the country, in the U.S. And it's its own, you know, group. It has its own sort of ethics and its own sort of groupthink. I don't know if Nielsen can comment on why, but I can tell you that the audience who listens to country is equally balanced, male and female. So that's not a bad idea for the future, Scott. Like, do other formats look like that? Is there a disparity between pop or hip hop in terms of who listens versus who is played gender-wise? That's an interesting idea for a follow-up study.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And I think that, you know, there was a kind of offline discussion that was a bit of a open table discussion at CRS about this topic. And, you know, without getting too controversial about it, I think that, you know, there's a lot of different positions that were taken on this, you know, and I think one of the, you know, one of the things that was out there was that, you know, certain artists who weren't being played didn't necessarily play the games well, as far as, you know, working with radio. One of the big things that, as John mentioned, I mean, the CRS convention, one of the best things for me coming to it versus a lot of other radio conferences is the artists show up. The artists are there. They're there shaking hands, kissing babies. You know, they're out there. They're, you know, really they're playing their music. They're at the cocktail parties. They're, you know, they're the labels do big events. You know, it's like kind of old time radio in a lot of ways. And so it's a really great convention for that way, because you've got radio and records in one place together, where a lot of the other events are records, radio, very separate. And I think that is a real positive thing about the country format. And I think there was some talk that some of the country artists who weren't being played maybe weren't making that same effort. That was one effort. I don't know if that's fair or not. I'm just saying these are some of the things that were talked about, because I'm not trying to make judgment on it. In terms of that, I think that also there's sometimes with certain artists, like Taylor Swift is an example, where Taylor Swift is viewed as she left the format, you know, and there wasn't a lot of criticism that they're not playing Taylor Swift because they're not really country songs anymore. And that, you know, she moved off into a pop place. And, you know, when she moved off into that position, she left kind of the country world. And that's, it wasn't looked at as a negative. It was just that she was a huge artist originally in country that kind of went away.
Is that kind of the same with Kacey Musgraves? Because I know a lot of people think Golden Hour is a pop album.
Yeah.
You know, and you gave it maybe a little country sauce and, you know, okay, what little passes country. So maybe is she in that same kind of boat with particular album?
The new record has a lot more pop songs on it. You know, I just saw her this weekend at Governor's Ball, and she was, you know, part of the set was very pop. It wasn't country, but a lot of it was very country. So, I mean, she's kind of a mixed bag, where she hasn't made the commitment that Taylor Swift has, where she's gone pop, you know, and she's still living a lot in the country world, but she really lives in kind of a bunch of worlds. You know, you'll see her at, you know, like she's a Governor's Ball. There's no other country artists or quasi country artists at that music fest. And she's at a lot of those fests around the country that no one else goes to. It was kind of similar. Eric Church did the same thing for a while, where he was going around to a lot of the more rock and pop conferences and showing up and doing sets there. And so, you know, there's a lot of artists like Eric Church who've done the same thing that Kacey Musgraves has done and tried to do some crossover stuff. And so I think that, you know, it could be fair on some songs, but not on all songs. And so I think that there's songs on her record that are certainly country songs. And that's where I think the Grammy song that she won for was pretty country song.
I mean, because surely it must be weird that this conversation has been going on for such a long time
And yeah, so
you can't avoid this topic. I mean, if you're a programmer, you know that this is sort of hanging over all programmers' heads, and the fact that they're still refusing to do this, if you want to, you know, go so far as to say it's an active suppression. I mean, that's seems very tone deaf, if nothing else.
Well, and also from a radio standpoint, you know, programmers are programmed to do what gets the highest ratings. And as we said, despite some, you know, declines in audience, country remains number one, shares remain very high. So, you know, for radical change to happen, you generally have to have a lot of elements motivating people and continuing to get top shares. I'm just sort of brainstorming out loud here, but you know, change is hard, especially when it continues to be the number one format. So it's an ongoing conversation, and I'm fascinated by it just like you are, because there's certainly something here. Right? Well, we're not just making this up, so to say.
The other thing, country has gone away from some of the hard – like there's Americana artists that are very country sounding, like a Margo Price who did zero airplay in country. There's Brandi Carlile is another example, you know, who's another Grammy Award winning artist, had a great performance at the Grammys. And she's, you know, winning, you know, all kinds of awards and accolades and so on, but she's not considered country. She's not on any really of any, volume being played at country radio because she doesn't fit in that narrow kind of focus of this pop country kind of world that's today that they feel is going to be marketable to the audience of country. Maybe that's for what John's point is, that the programmers don't feel that Brandi Carlile fits in with that audience. And that might be fine. You know, it's a little harder sell with Kacey Musgraves because a lot of those songs are really more pop country songs with a little bit of an edge to them, you know, in some cases. And so I think that's where that it becomes a little bit harder to defend. And so that's where I think they gave in, you know, and they started playing her a lot more.
Yeah, starting to like country. For me, in the 90s, it felt like there was a pretty good mix of Americana artists. And then at some point, it just kind of splintered off and – country just this decade became more a format where it was I don't think less extremes, but it feels like there's a typical sound that you hear in country. It's male dominated, obviously. Bro country was the big term for a long time, but it feels like country, maybe more than other formats, there's just sort of a sound you kind of have to follow if you want to get on mainstream country radio. There's almost just one sound and not much else.
Yep,
I think there's some truth to that. And as I said, continuing to be the number one rated format just sort of perpetuates whatever cycle that we're discussing.
If it ain't fixed, why, you know.
Right. Exactly.
if it ain't broke.
No, that's exactly.
You're going to fix it while it's broken.
Yeah. So one last top, at least for me, one last kind of point about women at country. Are there any automatic women at country? I know sometimes genres have this problem where, you know, even though the gender isn't fully represented, at least there's always one or two kind of, you know, Carrie Underwood for a long time felt like an automatic. But I don't know if Carrie's still on the same level that she was before. Miranda Lambert's been, you know, kind of quiet and she was a big star. Is there anybody who among women who feels like she's at least, you know, able to carry the flag, if nothing else, for a while? Or is everybody really just top to bottom affected by this?
There's nobody that jumps out of my – unless I'm just forgetting about someone right now. Because, I mean, Taylor Swift was that until she switched.
It was Taylor and Carrie, and Carrie for so long. And Carrie just had her streak snapped of always hitting the top 10 with every single Love Wins. So I got to number 11. So,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of it. And then it kind of stopped. And then, you know, it's all about – there are – you'll see at CRS, you know, you'll see a lot of country female artists mixed in, you know, they're playing and some of them are very talented and they've got some good songs. You know, to John's point from the beginning of the conversation, you know, where country is kind of a family format, you know, it goes across, you know, millennials, it goes, you know, all the way up to baby boomers. And it's rare. I mean, there really aren't a lot of formats that do that where when you really break down the demo cells, that it's really there. They could look great 25-54, but it's all 35-54. It's all, you know, 18-49 or, you know, and 18-49, like the high end of that's even old, you know. So that's what makes country so unique. And when it's spread that thin, it's hard to maintain that, especially without – if you're not replenishing the younger end with some younger artists that are going to be different enough to keep some of the younger fans listening, you know. And that's why they need to find the new – you know, the new Taylor Swift or the new Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, mail-wise, Luke Combs, probably the perfect example of someone who's just come in so huge and hit number one with his first five singles and country airplay. Looks like he's probably going there with his sixth one. Yeah, just hasn't been a problem for male artists. We've gotten a lot of new blood, male artist-wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, one last – sorry, you brought up something kind of cool, and I want to ask about at the CMS. So you mentioned there's a lot of budding young country female artists out there, and – If they know that country radio is having a hard time accepting women, is there any talk about trying to get through in other ways? Are people looking at streaming or anything as sort of the new breakthrough, or is radio just still so much the number one in the country world that, you know, that's the ticket that you really somehow need to find a way to cash in on?
Well, I think they're trying to get on the streaming side too. I think they're trying to look at it from both angles. Chris Stapleton was sort of brought to country music and brought to the forefront through streaming. But there haven't been that many examples I can point to where a female country artist has come up through, you know, streaming, is being streamed like crazy in markets and not being touched on the radio. And so you really, you know, you could do that a little bit with Kacey Musgraves. Some songs definitely are being underplayed by her. But you're not really, you know, you don't really see that at the same volume like you did with Chris Stapleton. But that's, I think that would be a place where a lot of female artists should be paying more attention to the streaming side, because it'll help give them a case, a database case. You're not just saying I'm female, you should play me, which isn't going to work, because they, like John was saying, the programmers are really in charge of making sure their station's number one. And if they're not convinced that it's going to help them, they're not going to play it. Doesn't matter, you know, if it's male or female. But the streaming data is a bigger and bigger factor when, you know, program directors are making the decisions, and also when promo teams are able to bring in some data-based information to convince a PD to play a song, you know. So I think it's going to be part of the job that they're going to have to do better at in terms of getting their songs played on the radio.
Ooh, just more hurdles to clear, unfortunately. That's an unfair race.
And there's a self-fulfilling prophecy happening here too. You mentioned it. I mean, if there's any music format that's been so closely tied to radio over the years, it is country. As we said, just that relationship, that close-knit relationship between artist and radio doesn't really exist anywhere else. So you've got that system to deal with. That's just in place. That's just like the learned behavior of how country music flows. And you get to the radio. So there's a lot of opportunity for change, and this is a great conversation, but the sort of optics of what it is now and the way it exists means, yeah, there's some things to overcome for sure.
I got to ask, is there any sort of research or anything, and maybe this is way too granular, because some people might counter that and say, well, you know, it's not, you don't have to lose ratings if you were to play more female artists. Like, but is there any history or any trend that, you know, if you play too many women or two women back to back or any of those sort of long held assumptions that actually does, you know, lower ratings or people don't tune in as long or anything that sort of supports that theory?
Not that I know of. Those are good questions. Those are good, like, music, you know, sort of conceptual questions, music test questions. Maybe somebody somewhere. There's a lot of really talented, smart country, you know, radio consultants out there. But I know that we haven't done it at Nielsen. That's a good question.
You guys didn't know we're just going to make this mostly about the whole uncomfortable discussion, throwing you guys right into it.
I was going to say, you know, four guys sitting around talking about women.
One thing we talked about last time, John, when you were here with R&B hip hop is, and again, I always find this an interesting stat, how much of streaming is catalog versus current. Are people, you might just think off the top of your head, people are streaming only new music, but it's actually overall, the numbers you guys have, 70% catalog, 30% current for all genres. So 70% of all music streamed is catalog over current. And it's actually more, even sharper catalog for country. It's 81 catalog, 19% current. And that's really different from what we were talking about last time, John, when you were here about R&B hip hop. It's a 54% catalog, 46% current, almost a split of new music and older music. But with country, it's 81% catalog. What's your take on that? And is part of it that, again, country's history musically goes back maybe so many more decades than hip hop that there's just so much more music available?
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it right there. You've got multiple decades of more music than some of the other genres you just mentioned. And country is, as we've been saying, the country audience is more slowly coming to streaming. It's happening. They are streaming more than they ever used to, but they've been lagging. Part of that has to do with how mass appeal country is. You know, think about what's happened to R&B and hip hop and pop, and those are much more younger skewing. There's not quite as many older listeners to those formats. So, you know, the younger people, you know, pick up streaming quicker and all that kind of stuff. But country, because it's so mass appeal, it's just the change happens a little slower. You don't see the change happen quite as quickly, I think, in country. And yeah, there's so much music that's been played over the years and so many different distinct types of country too, that there is such a library out there. So it makes a lot of sense that, 8 in 10 songs streamed their country are catalog. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I've said, for me, it's a 90s country. I'm curious, you guys, what's your favorite era, artists, styles of country music? Scott?
I like the old stuff. I like the, you know, Johnny Cash and, Merle Haggard and, you know, the kind of old outlaw country, Willie and, you know, Willie Whalen and the boys.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. The drinkards.
Yeah.
John?
I like a lot of the same things. And also I really enjoy the songwriting aspect of country. When I get to go to CRS, the sessions I love are the ones where people come in and talk about that. You know, people that write these songs and what it takes to do it and how you're telling stories and what an art form it is. So that obviously spans across a lot of country, but it's one of those things where you know it when you hear it. You know, when you hear a particular song or a particular artist, they grab you. That's the beauty of music and the beauty of that format. So I really enjoy the really well thought out sort of storytelling songs. That's my favorite.
And to pile on to that, I think that's why I like so much of the Americana offshoot of country and rock, which is, you know, the old John Prine music, new John Prine music, and all the artists that kind of come out around that, you know, are Jason Isbell and that whole kind of genre. I think there's just so much great songwriting and so many great storytelling in there that is at least being picked up in that part of the music scene. Yeah, a lot out of Nashville.
Yeah, I forget what we were talking about on the podcast recently, but somehow we wound up in this deep discussion of Goodbye Earl by Dixie Chicks, which is just one of the craziest stories ever, where they kill Earl, but they're the heroes of the song.
Exactly.
That's what, as country as it gets.
It is, absolutely.
One other thing that came up in this webinar you guys did is music discovery, and same thing we've been saying, whereas for other genres, it's not necessarily on radio, but music discovery for country is mostly on radio and playlists, streaming services, playlists where Rap Caviar, there's that. There's no country caviar. Eighth place is streaming services playlist for music discovery for country. Radio number one. Playlists for country, it's number eight. So again, another sign that just shows how it's radio and not streaming, at least historically. And as you said, it's changing a bit going forward. But music discovery, radio still is that big for country.
There's that farm system we were talking about. That's just the way, that's how you get to the show, if you will, in country radio. You come up through it and that's how people hear it. Before streaming was even around, before digital technology, that was where people got their country artists. So you're right, that habit sort of hangs on today with the country listener.
Absolutely.
I think it's also really interesting to think about the next generation of country listeners. So when you bring up that, you know, age demographic map today of who is the country listener, and as we said, once you get above 18, it's a very strong audience all the way until late in your life. But what's to the left of that on the graph? What about teens today? So radio listeners, country music fans that are teenagers today, how are they going to get their country in 5 to 10 years? And especially once they enter the working force and they become a millennial type generation and they start having kids and all that stuff happens. So I think those are some really interesting things to think about for country as well. And we saw some great presentations at CRS this year about that, about, you know, are you thinking about teenagers? Do you program to teenagers? Do you spend a lot of your time researching what teenage fans want? Because that's going to be who you're going after in 5 to 10 years. So with all the things we've talked about and the depth of music and new versus old and men versus women and all the different sort of iterations of country music, I think one thing that isn't talked about a lot is what does the future look like and how do you get young people today who are voracious music fans, you know, they're growing up in the age of technology, all music is available to them at the touch of a fingertip. How do you get those kinds of music listeners to become country listeners and to become country radio listeners? That's a really big point of conversation for the future, I think.
Were there any thoughts that people threw out there, or is everyone still kind of trying to figure it out for themselves?
Well, one of the big findings was how important streaming is, right? How, again, younger teenagers today are listening to so much music, and in addition to using the radio, they certainly stream. And so that was a really interesting finding about how, you know, teenagers influence their parents, right? So they had a bunch of country listening households, and, you know, the parents talking about, well, I never really used to use Spotify until Mike turned me on to it. And now, in addition to, you know, my local station, I also like to listen to this one on Spotify, right? I like to go here and get that. So we know that streaming is a great indicator of what's happening, what the audience wants. And from a younger standpoint, Scott, you can certainly talk about this. From a young standpoint, I mean, that's probably the first place you would go is, you know, what's happening in streaming, because we know that it's really being driven by young listeners.
Absolutely. And I think that you see it every day. You'll see things pop in there that they tend to be younger skewing. They tend to be younger artists, you know, that are coming up first.
Right.
But not always. I mean, Chris Stapleton actually does cross over to older and younger. It's a different example. But the biggest example you see that are certainly that way. And you see that in hip hop in a big way. As far as, you know, those artists that come up through there out of nowhere in a week, they'll all of a sudden appear on the chart and they'll be, you know, number two in a market as far as streaming, especially if it's a local artist. And all of a sudden they'll just take off. And so it's really having a huge impact. And I think that's where a lot of that has to go. And it's talking to everyone in the household too. You know, when you're talking about what your on-air talent is talking about, is making sure you're not just talking to parents, that you're talking to the whole family when you're out there and communicating with them, because you're really the country radio. You are talking to the whole family in a lot of cases. It's not just the parents that you want to reach. The problem is the buying demo, the demo that radio really cares about, 25-54. Those are huge demos. Both up to, you know, 45, 54 and 55 plus are huge for country. But when they drop, those people drop off out of the 54 year range, they become less valuable from an advertiser perspective for country radio. And that over time, you know, wears itself out if you're not replenishing on the younger end. And that's, you know, to back up your point, John, I mean, that's, I think, really key to figure out strategies and tactics to really go after those younger people, both in terms of what your on-air talent's talking about and also the new music that you're playing on the station, and even the gold music that you're playing on the station that's going to attract that audience. And in some cases, not just be a turnoff to some of those audiences too. And that goes to your music testing and the things you're doing.
Classic rock is having the same discussions. In fact, I think we talked about this on one of our previous podcasts.
We did.
Yeah. The difference is there's not necessarily new music being played today that's going to go right into a classic rock station. It's going to take 20 years for it to make it there. But country has new music coming out today. So that's the advantage country has there.
Country's in a lot better place than classic rock for that reason.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting going forward as streaming takes a bigger share of all listening, because country's been king of radio for so long. So it's kind of maybe their biggest challenge in a long time. It's as we move into people growing up more in a streaming world, it's going to kind of be tested maybe more than it ever has, at least in recent decades of country's dominance.
As streaming of country grows more and more year to year, it's going to go through some of those same changes that led us to SoundCloud rap, you know, in the hip hop world. So, yeah, I think we have a front row seat for what that's going to be in the next few years.
Thank you, as always, John, Scott, your first time here on the podcast. Great insights, as always. You guys are doing all these different webinars for different genres. What's coming out the rest of the year?
Yeah, we're going to do rock in July. So rock is next month. And we were just on a call yesterday talking about, okay, what do you mean when you say the word rock? There's classic rock, there's alternative, there's AAA, there's active, there's, you know, and then the charts start to bleed together. So we have our homework to do on rock, but that's coming up next month. And then we're doing contemporary Christian in the fall and also Latin closer to the end of the year.
We'll keep having you guys on. Thanks so much as always.
Thanks. Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you guys. I'll try to pass the night away with somebody new, but they don't have a shower and I compare them to you. It's too late, too late. Baby, I know I'll never find you again. Find you again.
All right. Yeah, be sure to tune in next week. I think next week is really one of the first sort of stacked debut weeks we're going to have on the chart in a while. We got, as we mentioned earlier, the Miley Cyrus, Mother's Daughter, Katy Perry, Never Really Over, Camila Cabello back with Mark Ronson on Find You Again. So feels like, you know, three really big pop names all vying for that big comeback. So we'll see where all those land. And, I mean, of course, you know, Old Town Road will be up there waiting for a challenger. So we'll see if any of those seem like they might have the momentum soon to knock it out.
If James Holzhauer can lose on Jeopardy, anything can happen.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. That's a yeah. No one saw it coming the way it did. So who knows? You know, people sleep on some of these songs. Give it the right combination, and down goes Lil Nas.
And speaking of that, we mentioned a while back Billie Eilish moving up to number two with "Bad Guy." So if that peaks at number two, under "Old Town Road," it would be the fifth song to peak at number two, and that would tie a record for most songs to peak at number two under one number one. It was a theme from A Summer Place back in 1960. And "Everything I Do It For You" in 1991. So just another sign that shows how dominant Old Town Road has been. Five songs, it looks like, unless a bad guy can get to number one, will have peaked under it. And maybe it'll break the record. Maybe one of those songs, Trevor, you just mentioned, maybe that becomes the sixth song to peak at number two.
And maybe, and I guess speaking of records, there's a number two record, but that number one record, I think people, you know, the way the streams are going, may need to start opening the record books. We saw Despacito finally get to 16 weeks, tie the all-time record. Lil Nas X got a way to go, but, you know, it feels like if, I don't know, the way things are going, the way the streams are not declining, maybe people might want to take a look and see if it can get to the four-month mark as well.
Yeah, 10 weeks looks like is probably pretty set for next week, so it'll join the rear club of double-digit weeks at number one next week.
The lambs are fuming.
All right, so closing with different kind of a flashback this week. This is where my being such a radio fan really plays in. It became sort of known. It's more of a New York thing than national, but I feel like 95.5 WPLJ here in New York was a pretty known station, even beyond New York. So signed on in sort of the format it would have for the next 48 years, some version of Top 40 or Adult Top 40, pop rock, in 1971. And just called themselves the world famous PLJ. I came here from Boston and also working at a Hot AC station in Boston Mix. I always kind of looked at PLJ is that station in New York. It just kind of had that aura of the call letters. And for people who grew up listening to PLJ for the last 48 years, this is – it's even older than me, Trevor, 48 years.
Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
So station was on the air for that long, and it was recently sold to a Christian broadcaster, and it was known after that coming up that its time as a Hut AC, adult pop station, was limited. So Cumulus sold the station, and then word came out that May 31st was going to be the last day on the air for PLJ with the morning show that had been there. Todd Pattengill had been there for years. Before that, he'd been teamed with Scott Shannon, that it was a show with Jade for the last few years. But it just became a really emotional countdown of, well, PLJ is really going to be going away. And same thing actually happened to Mix 107.3 in Washington, WRQX. But so I thought I would listen on Friday, the last day. And just as a radio fan, and the one thing that hit me listening is how emotional it really was, just for me listening, but for all the jocks who were on the air, but also listeners calling in. They had people who had been on the station for years. The last couple of days just turned into a whole farewell. And it was just some of the best radio I've ever heard for the last couple of days. And so great because it was just so honest. DJs were just saying what the station meant to them, what listeners meant to them. It's probably not something you could do on an everyday basis because it would just sort of be weird, I guess, at some level if you were always talking about yourself. And
just kind of lose its value.
Yeah, you know, so it just had it's like a great finale of a TV show where it just kind of hits you emotionally. And one thing I've always thought is streaming versus radio. If a streaming service goes away, if Spotify goes away at some point, is it?
Shh, you hush.
Well, no, I was going to say, I was thinking, oh, it wouldn't have that same weight as radio because there's so much more human element. There's DJs, there's the calling in, and it wouldn't be quite the same. But at the same time, we got the news this week that iTunes is going away. And I still listen to my iPod. So I can kind of see how with whatever platform you grew up with, maybe it is just a personal thing. Although there's just such a different element with radio because there's that human element in a different way. And it's shared, unlike streaming.
Yeah, I guess it kind of reminds me of like when you see some of those like with like the news anchors retire or like, you know, 60 Minutes correspondents or whatever. And, you know, they kind of just – I mean, this obviously was much more announced. But usually they kind of like hit you with that little, you know, like 2 minutes or a monologue at the end and – you know, I mean, just sum up a career of, you know, for some of these people, you know, multiple decades. I mean, you're right. It just, you know, it's something that makes you just really, you know, tear up and really affects you just to hear how much directly, you know, breaking that fourth wall, what this experience has meant to them. What's it been like hearing your feedback? What's it like, you know, seeing, taking kids on the tour and all that kind of thing, and even being recognized in the grocery store or whatever, like a local celebrity, just how much of that impact, you know, and how that's really helped to shape and define and give, you know, a lot of purpose and meaning to their careers for so long. Yeah.
And part of the magic of radio too is always that it's always on. It's 24/7. And it's just, even if you're not listening, it's always there. It's very comforting. Walking in Monday to Billboard, that was the first day that it wasn't on the air. It flipped formats Friday at 7 p.m. And it just really felt like something was just missing, a little pulse I was just missing with the station not being there anymore. So farewell to a great station, PLJ. Going to close with the last few minutes of PLJ. There's no way we could say any of this better than what the jocks on the station said. So you'll hear the song to kick things off of where the WPLJ call letters came from, and then hear some just really emotional radio and really try not to be sad about it on the jock side, because when there's something that's missed like this, it means that there was something so loved. So here's the end of PLJ, maybe for now, but at least on 95.5 for those 48 straight years. PLJ's goodbye here on the Billboard Chappie Podcast.
This is the nearly famous, highly outrageous, but never ever contagious, original, extra large and turbocharged, one and only, no baloney, Scott and Todd, Friday morning, weekend blast, all spectacular.
95.5 WPLJ, New York.
Well, I said WPLJ, really tastes good to me. What for the lemon juice? What for the lemon juice?
And Oates live from the PLJ studios. That is probably the most recent recorded version of that song, and I know we had several options to choose from. Before we have a chance to toast, because you heard us open the champagne, and if you're someplace safe and of age, we hope you'll join us for the same. We would like to get the current full-time staff, as we have about 3 minutes left, just to take a moment and say goodbye, and we'll start with Joey Kramer.
Many, many years ago, Scott Shannon and Tom Cuddy gave this young kid at that time the opportunity of a lifetime. They handed me the keys to a Lamborghini, and they said, don't screw it up, and they trusted me with it, so I thank them. I thank all the DJs who helped me along the way and helped me grow. I thank you loyal listeners. You guys are unbelievable, the most loyal ever. To my family and friends who were always there for the emotional support, especially over the last 3.5 months, you guys rock. And to my ride or die, my incredible, beautiful wife, Tina, who never once ever said or complained, oh, you got to work this weekend, you got to work this holiday. She is number one, the best, babe. I love you.
Excellent. Thank you, Joey. Melanie Torres.
Of course, I'm the one who can't hold it together. This radio station has changed my life. I grew up in Florida. I never thought that I would be here. Like, I think I was 30 when I came to New York City, and it was always my goal to be here. And I just want to thank Mike Allen for I mean, just believing in me and teaching me so much and being by my side throughout this whole ride. I've learned so much from you, and you've been so great. And Race, you're literally like who I want to be when I grow up. And everyone, the staff here, you guys have become my family. I moved here and I only knew my fiance, so you guys were my family, the people that I had celebrated with, who I cried with, who I was frustrated with. So thank you guys for being here. It's unbelievable to see this many people in a room right now. And I want to thank my fiance for being my rock and getting me through this and being my shoulder to cry on. And yeah, I love you guys. All right, I'm done.
Mike Allen.
Mine's real quick. I said my piece. I made so many friends here. It's not even friends. You guys are all family here. Hopefully we all stay in touch for a very long time. And this has been the greatest part of my life, professionally and personally. So thank you all for being a part of that. And thank you to the listeners. And thank you, Mr. Race Taylor.
Thank you. We're down to just under a minute. So before we go, my wife is by my side. A thank you to our families, our immediate families, our extended families, our New Jersey families, our work families, everybody in this room. You have lived up to the testament from just a few weeks ago. Smile because it happened, and you have been that exactly to a T. While we get set for a toast, one final phrase.
And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
If you would please raise your glasses. May the 48-year run of this radio station prove to be a testament to the power and the love of terrestrial radio. And may the mere thought of the letters PLJ bring a smile to your face, a warmth to your heart, and a tingle to your ears. Here's to those who have walked these halls and breathed life into these microphones. It is with peace, love, and joy that we toast the Whiteport Lemon Juice. Here's to PLJ. And for one final time, from high above Madison Square Garden, this is the world famous WPLJ, New York.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.